Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode brought to you by Yahoo Sports Canada. My name is Iman. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, leave a comment, all of that good stuff. And I am joined by Oren. Oren, what is up?
What is up? You know, just getting through the end of the season, struggling along with these Raptors, taking it day by day, game by game, just like them, you know?
You know what? If you live and die by these games at this point, RIP to you.
That's my mistake. You're right. I was trying to say earlier, like, I gave up on the team, but then after the Pirtle trade, I bought back in a little bit. And then this road trip has caused me my second giving up on the team. So I was living and dying a little bit there, and it was not good for my mental health.
I mean, I'm a hypocrite because obviously I was living and dying with this team as
well.
The Jakob Pertl trade, I mean, it's one, obviously, that lots of people had been calling for a really long time, and I bought in entirely, and I still think, and we'll dig into some of the numbers, that there are some reasons to buy in, but my gosh, if you still believe in this team after that Lakers loss, sending you my condolences, my thoughts, and my prayers, because I'm not sure there's anything else we can do. But you know what, let's take a step back and let's look at the NBA as a whole. Because I think we sometimes get too lost in what the Raptors look like. And it's because it's a team that we love. It's a team that we follow. But there is a trend in the NBA. There is a trend towards really potent offenses. And even this Raptors team that was supposed to be this gritty defense that, you know, got stops for 48 minutes. And that's how they were going to grind out in games. Actually been winning that way, and their offensive rating for the entirety of the year has been better than their defensive rating, even with Pirtle back in. That sort of changed a little bit, but still, the way that this team is built, they're good when their offense is just decent. And so you wrote a piece for The Guardian that I want to talk a little bit about. You talked about NBA offenses and how much they've changed just even recently, right? You mentioned in that piece, I'll let you speak to it, but you mentioned in that piece that Warriors offense with KD and Stephen Curry, which was, you know, the greatest offense of all time, would be like, what would you say, top 10, was it?
It was 10th, and actually at the time I wrote it, the Raptors were 10th. So the Raptors had the same offense as the KD Steph Warriors.
I mean, I see no difference. I see no difference between those two teams.
Yeah.
So what you talk about in your piece, but I'd like to get you to speak on it here as well. What do you think you would equate that to? The fact that, I mean, you have two of the greatest offensive players, you know, period, in basketball, and Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant. And now you have a team that struggles, and yet still we're talking about a similar or the same offensive rating at that point. What do you think has changed in the league to make this shift?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of things. I think teams are just getting smarter, and this is a lot of like analytical stuff, you know, analytical people going into front offices, changing the shot profiles. So teams are shooting way more threes, way more stuff at the rim. I think players are way more skilled than they used to be, especially bench players. Like, you used to ask bench players in a lot of cases to do one thing. Like, specialists existed in the NBA. I don't think they really do anymore. Like, if you can only shoot threes and you can't play defense, you don't even really have a spot in the league anymore. So bench players are asked to shoot threes, put the ball on the floor, make plays, play defense. So the skill has just increased a ton. The shot profile has gotten a lot more efficient. And then when I got into the piece was like, with that increase in skill and everything, the NBA has failed to kind of adjust and benefit defenses, in the sense of, at the same time that this skill increase is happening, fouls are rising more than ever, because if you touch someone on the perimeter, it's a foul now. There's really no contact allowed in the perimeter. And so there's basically like this weird thing that's happening where defenses are in an impossible situation. They can't stop these skilled guys from getting to the rim, and therefore either you foul them and send them to the free throw line. Free throws are up like highest since like 2000, or you just let them score. And that's what we're seeing in the NBA. And that's what we're seeing from the Raptors too. And I know we'll get into it, but the Raptors defense is predicated on aggression. It's predicated on physicality. I think that's why they brought a bunch of 6'9 guys into the field. They absolutely have this belief that you foul all game, those fouls are going to stop being called towards the end, kind of thing. They've spoken about it. Other teams have spoken about it for the Raptors. And that's just not the reality. And I think we'll get into this again with the Fred VanVleet comments. I think the Raptors are really frustrated with the way they've been officiated this season, dating back to the Philadelphia series last season. They have this aggressive defense, but they're not being allowed to play it to the style they want to, because the NBA is encouraging offensive flow and not defensive aggression.
Yeah, no, I think that's incredibly well said. And you did put in your piece that, you know, Boston, who leads the league in defense right now, would be what, the worst defensive rating to have ever led the league. And I was looking at the numbers this morning, and the teams that are top seven in defensive rating in the NBA, are five of those are also in the top seven in personal fouls called. Like, just the numbers sort of bear that out, that the teams that are still the best defenses play that aggressive style. And so they are going to get called for a lot of fouls, which is why you're going to see not so high of a defensive rating, but also it's interesting that the numbers bear it out, and it's pretty clean and clear to see that your best defenses are also the teams that foul the most, and the Washington Wizards for whatever reason. I think what you talked about, and you touched on it already, that, and the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because a lot of focus this season has been on what this Raptors team looks like, what the build is. In the offseason, there will be three players that will be unrestricted free agents. And so right now, and I wrote about this as well, I think what the front office is looking at, what the front office should be looking at is this a team that you believe in? Is this a team that you can build? Is this a structure that makes sense together? And a year ago, I wrote a piece thinking, yeah, and that's kind of changed a little bit, because for one, we realized that you need a center, and two, I think we're going to talk about it in a little bit, you need a point guard, but you can't just have a bunch of guys that are 6'9", but also in a league where offense is the star, offense is the show, right? The NBA makes rules. They made rules like the hand checking rule, they apparently made the rip through rule, but they're still calling that the opposite way. So defenses continue to get dinged, whereas offenses continue to sort of thrive in this new NBA. So if you step back and look at it, does this Raptors roster make sense, considering we're building a team predicated on being good defensively and being kind of meh on the offensive end? What are your thoughts on something like that?
It's a really good question. I wish I had a stronger opinion on it, because I, obviously, since the Poeltl trade, there's been a lot of talk about this Pascal, Scotty, Poeltl front court. None of them are good three-point shooters. Can that spacing work in the modern NBA? And I wish I had a strong opinion. I know a lot of people do. I need to see a little bit more before I can say definitively, like, yes, this can work, or no, it can't. We can get into like the starting lineup with Poeltl has been great. It's been great offensively. 123 points per 100 possessions. It's like a great offensive rating.
Yeah.
And so I think, first of all, this playoffs will be a really big factor to my kind of opinion on it, because there are these teams like Dallas and the Kings who are just offensive teams. We've really never seen this before, teams going all in on just offense and no defense. And like, I'm curious to see if those teams can win a playoff series, win two playoff series, because if they can, then it looks pretty bad on the Raptors' idea of let's go all in on length and defense. If it proves out that at the end of the day, defense still wins championships, which I think it probably will, honestly. Even Denver is an offensive-oriented team, so I'd be curious if they won the championship.
I was going to mention it. Like, if we look in the Western Conference, the vast majority of those teams, and I was going to bring that up, are like, they're offensive potent teams. That's what the West is deciding to sort of build. And it's like, the East has your Milwaukees and your Clevelands and your Bostons, but the West doesn't really.
It's true, but then you look at Milwaukee, and that this is again why I'm so hard to have a strong take on it. What if Milwaukee steamrolls through the league, wins a championship, and who's their front court? It's Brooke Lopez, it's Bobby Portis, it's Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's not a whole lot of three-point shooting. Like, yeah. Brooke is obviously a great shooter, but like they play a lot
game
of
game one. I'm still reeling over that. I haven't gotten over it. Taking game one away from us in the conference finals.
Even Jay Crowder, not a very good three-point shooter. They are a defensive-oriented team. So if they win the championship, then I think it looks a little bit better on the Raptors in the sense of you can build this team out of defense no matter what the modern NBA regular season kind of says. We also know that officiating cracks down a little bit in the playoffs in the sense of more physicality is allowed. And defense can play a little bit more to their strengths without getting called as much. So, yeah, I don't really know if the Raptors' kind of big three front court is viable long term in the modern NBA, especially with the 3-point shooting that's now required. I will say this though, like I'm pretty sure that this starting five is not winning you a championship in the sense of if you have three front court players who aren't good 3-point shooters, your two backcourt players better be knocked down movement shooters. And Fred's 3-point shot has fallen off a cliff this season. And OG has just never been like a movement aggressive, going to take 10 threes a game type of guy. Maybe he becomes that, but maybe not. So that's kind of where I'm at with the Raptors.
Yeah, I think with OG, it's really interesting because I think even if we break down those numbers, the vast majority of the 3-point shots that he does take, his shot diet is entirely in the corners, and they're almost entirely catch and shoot opportunities. So when we're talking about two movement shooters who can kind of shoot from anywhere, it's probably not going to be that, which is really interesting. And I think to even look at this Raptors team, outside of even the three core players that we're talking about there, when you look at the bench and it's like, oh, it's more of the same as the starters, I think that's where the Raptors sort of get into. Well, there's not a lot that you can do to throw different looks. And I talk about, you know, we talk about versatility in this way where it's like, can you guard 1 through 5? But versatility is more malleability. Can you go big? Can you go small? Can you put out shooters when you need, like, do you have different looks that you can throw at teams in order to match them there? And that's something that the Raptors just don't have because it's impossible to have that with every single person being the exact same size and holding the same skill set.
Yeah, that's true. I will say, like, to the Raptors front office's credit, they have done some stuff to make them more versatile. Bringing in Poeltl made them a whole lot more versatile. Even a guy like Will Barton, who I don't even like the fact that he's in the rotation, but he's another shooter. You can now have more shooters coming off the bench. Koloko's now up from the G League. I think we might see him at the back of five and Precious kind of playing the four off the bench. So they are bringing in more and more players with these malleable skill sets, but a lot of them are really young and a lot of them just aren't consistent. So I don't think they've reached by any means like a final evolution of the team. But I do think they are bringing in more talent that is working its way there. Like, I'm not nearly as down on the Raptors as a lot of people. I think, honestly, I believe in the talent.
We could have had this conversation a week ago.
Yeah. No, like, this season is over for all intents and purposes. But next season, like, there's a real path for them to reshape the roster a little bit. And I just believe in the talent. There's so much talent on this team, even if the fit issues are not clean.
And I completely agree with that as a premise. You know, I joke about the Lakers game breaking me. Kind of, it didn't really break me. But the way that I sort of look at this team and the way that I kind of came into this season, even when they started off they had a pretty bad start as well. It was just like, if you're not going to win a championship in any given year, it's okay to face adversity. Like, I think the Raptors looking at what they have and saying, and it being tested to its limits has forced the front office to one, make those changes, bringing in a Will Barton, bringing in a Jakob Poeltl. It's forced them to sort of make these decisions. And, you know, similar to, and I likened it to like bringing in Damari Carroll because you needed some perimeter defense and you needed some shooting, right? It's similar to bringing in PJ Tucker and Serge Ibaka because you realize you need a stretch four in those situations. And so, yeah, like it's 1 year that they kind of have to bring in all of these pieces. But I think looking at where your holes are, whether it happens in the playoffs or it happens in the regular season for you, like it's done with this team, is important in terms of like figuring out if this core with Fred VanVleet and with Pascal Siakam and Scottie Barnes and Jakob Poeltl makes sense or it doesn't.
Yeah, and I want to say about the Pirtle trade, because I keep seeing people go, I can't believe they bought at the deadline. Like, there's this idea
Oh.
of buying versus selling at the deadline. I think we need to like kind of change those ideas in our head, because they obviously didn't buy Pirtle just for this season. They bought Pirtle because they needed a at the end of the day, they needed a starting center some way long term. And they marked Pirtle as their guy. And I just don't know how you can look at that trade, look at how well Pirtle's played, look at how well he's even fit with the starters, and be like, oh my God, this front office is cooked, which is the
Yeah.
general sentiment. It's like, to me, I understand there's fit issues, and I'm not sure if it's going to work long term, but Pirtle on itself, a first round pick for Pirtle, he's been amazing since becoming Raptor, like a legitimately top, I don't know, 12 center in the league. Like, he's
Yeah.
playing at such a high level that I just can't be that mad about it.
I said this and I wrote about this as well. Like, to me, I agree with you entirely about it's not about buying or selling for just this season. I mentioned it at the top of the pod where the Raptors have to look at Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent Jr. and decide if this is a core that they want to keep together long term. And in my opinion, you cannot bet on this core until you give them the pieces around them to actually fully maximize them, right? Like, in the same way, you need to make sure that DeMar with a 3-and-D wing right next to him still doesn't work. You need to try that out with Pascal and
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Fred, because it's only fair to sort of give them those same opportunities that you gave to Kyle and DeMar. And to me, you couldn't really say that this core is a failure until you gave them a center and until you gave them I think some playmaking off the bench matters as well, and some more shooting on the team too. So to me, it's like you need to truly believe that this core doesn't make sense together before you tear it down. It's not fair to not give them that leeway. It's not fair to give them that, to not give them that rope, and then try to decide if you want to pay Fred his next contract, which, spoiler alert, I think they should. And so to me, it just like I always sort of saw it in that way. It's like it's the same sort of rope that was given to Kyle and DeMar, but it's just 23 or 24 games or however many games from the trade deadline it was for Jakob Poeltl. And also, like, there's been a lot, and I think I've talked about this on here as well, but there's been a lot of talk about like, well, it's a first round pick and you don't know, like maybe you blow this core up. Maybe it doesn't work. Maybe it doesn't make sense. And it's not really hard to course correct, right? Like, it's not really, we saw what the packages were for OG Anunoby. We know what the packages are for like a Pascal Siakam. If in the end you say, actually, this team does not work, we gave them their runway, we put all of the pieces around them and it has not paid off. You're like, these are not bad contracts to trade. These are not difficult pieces to move. And so a 2024 pick, which, you know, by all accounts right now, is a pick to trade based off of what experts are saying is fine. I think it's a low risk move. And in terms of selling, Masai's never really done that at the deadline. He's only ever added pieces to his team because, as he says, 29 losers at the end of the season, much easier to assess and make deals then. It's always fun to sort of rant about why this team should stay together because I think it's better to be a little bit more optimistic about this team. I think there's reason to be, and you mentioned it, the talent. But there's also reason to worry about this team. And my biggest worry is the bench. I think you said at the top that a couple of things that you said that I want to bring up here. First thing is that there aren't very many in today's NBA, bench players are not specialists in one area. They have to sort of be good across the board. the Raptors are one of those teams where you struggle to look at the bench and see well-rounded players. You start to see very much specialists in each category. And I think that we've seen that hurt them with a lot of the bench play this season. Do you have any thoughts about something like that?
No, that's a good point. I'll definitely give you that. I will say, though, their bench, especially now that they made this change in the starting lineup, their bench is super young.
Yeah.
When you look at Precious, Gary, they're both 23. Koloko, he's like 21. Sometimes Jeff Doughton, sometimes Malachi plays. Like, their bench is extremely young. So I agree. They are right now very one-dimensional players. The front office, like we just talked about, is much more patient than the fan base. So I do think if you ask them, they would say, yes, they are. But 2 years from now, they're not going to be. And that's when we want to contend. Like, the idea is that eventually the bench will be a little bit more versatile just through those guys growing. And I definitely believe with like a Chua, for example, this is about the worst we've ever seen him play. He's going to be better than this. He's going to develop. We've seen him develop over the last year. And like, we can talk about all these solutions to fix the bench, and we will. But at the end of the day, Gary and Precious are better players than this. They have to play better. This is not a Nick Nurse issue. It's like these two guys chose the worst time of this season to start slumping. They need to get their act together and just play better.
Yeah. And it's brutal when one is your offensive specialist off the bench and the other is the defensive specialist, and both of them decide to not do the one thing that, you know, we need them for. But it's okay. Because the starter look isn't okay, because it's lost them tons of games. I mean, I saw this tweet from you that like shocked me, and you mentioned it right now with the Raptors having what was it? The starters have an offensive rating of 123, which would just be absolutely phenomenal. But also this tweet, which I thought was really, really interesting, is Aaron Rose said that the Raptors had a net rating of plus 0.7 prior to the trade deadline. And then in the 12 games since the trade deadline, they have a net rating of minus 2.6. So I think we all look at this team and say, they're better. They're a better team with Jakob Poeltl. However, the numbers bear that they're not. And that's not because of the starting lineup, because you responded with a stat that I thought was really staggering, saying the starting lineup is plus 13.7 per 100 possessions. So they are actually absolutely destroying teams, and it's the bench. What do you, like, I know a lot of what we've talked about is just sort of the long term, right? This is not about this season for the Raptors, but it's about what this looks like next year and the year after. But my question to you is, for the remaining however many games and possibly the play-in, what do you think needs to change in order for this to not be the case?
Yeah, I don't think there's any easy solutions, because anything I'm going to say, I think, is kind of plugging one hole and opening another. But that doesn't mean that it won't help improve the team. So I came out of practice today, and Nick Nurse alluded to the fact that Koloko's back with the team. He said he might play backup center minutes. He alluded to Precious playing on the wing more. So I do think we might see Koloko and Precious coming off the bench together, which would obviously help the rim protection. Precious just hasn't been good at the five in these bench units all season, because I think a big problem is with the bench, there's not a lot of point of attack defenders on it. And so it's kind of free reign to the rim, and you're asking Precious to plug all these holes, and he just isn't at a point in his career where he can do that. So everyone is asking for Koloko to play and Precious to play at the four. I actually don't agree with that sentiment, in the sense that I would like to see it, but I'm not there with Koloko right now. I don't know if he's ready for the NBA right now. I've seen him a lot. I've seen him in the G League a lot. I just think he needs a little bit more seasoning. So I think they'll try that, but Koloko might get into foul trouble. He's just not a perfect player yet. What I want to see personally is, and it might sound radical, but it's not that radical. Like, I want Precious to play more with the starters and Poeltl to play more with the bench. Yeah. Obviously, you don't start Precious. You don't reward him for playing bad or all that. But hook Poeltl earlier. Get Precious in there with the starters. He's been really successful with the starters all season. Again, I think it's because you have Fred and OG, and these guys are great point of attack defenders, and it's just a lot less holes to cover up. And then let Poeltl play with these bench lineups, where he actually can be that savior on the back end. The problem, obviously, is that starting lineup has killed, and it's nice to get them as many minutes as possible together. But that's kind of the best solution I can think of, because
that's interesting.
It would solve a lot of the bench's defensive problems.
In my head, like, one of my favorite things has just been the Fred VanVleet Jakob Poeltl connection, and I'm like, the pick and roll game has been insane. I'm like, can Gary do? I don't think I've ever seen Gary just not pass up a shot.
Yeah, it's a good point. So, I think Yak wouldn't be. It's a good point. Like, Yak wouldn't be unlocked with the bench the same way he is with the starters. But maybe that means. Yeah, maybe that means you have to play Doughton at the point guard with the bench, and they could have a pick and roll game. Maybe Barnes
or Malachi. I mean, hasn't that been? We're talking about especially. I love the laugh at the mention of playing Malachi Flynn. Yeah. But I mean, if we are talking about someone who is, you know, apparently like a one specialist type of guy, it has been the pick and roll game. And so, if you actually get him a big who can roll and who can catch, maybe you can unlock something there with the bench lineups. It's gotta throw things at the wall at this point.
No, I only laugh because I don't think Nick Nurse is doing that.
I don't think he has
any trust with Malachi. But maybe Barnes and Poeltl can have some of that pick and roll chemistry off the bench. I just think you need to shelter Precious a little bit more than Nick is right now. And whether that's playing him with Koloko or playing him with the starters, those two things have both worked really well this season. Precious playing with the bench groups hasn't. So, yeah, I'm just looking for answers.
I think that's what sort of everyone is doing, including the coaching staff, including the players, it feels like right now. But hopefully a lot of these guys can just sort of pick it up. I agree with you. I think in terms of like Gary Trent Jr., you just got to hit your shots down. And for Precious, I mean, we've seen it. He does play better with the starters. And you mentioned it, having OG and Fred VanVleet as your point of attack defenders is much better than whatever exists off the bench. So I completely agree with you there. And I think just sort of thinking about this conversation, I think we touched on a lot of really big things, which is, I think the overall biggest thing is, does this team make sense in a modern NBA? Considering a couple, like a year ago, I would have said, this is the modern NBA. This is what you want. You want big wings who can do absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. And now we're starting to see the limitations. Do you think that my assessment a year ago is correct? Or do you think we've learned maybe that this is not what a modern NBA looks like, and that you actually just positions exist for a reason and players exist for a reason and shooting is necessary. And maybe this idea that you have just a bunch of Giannis Antetokounmpo sized players on the court won't actually work.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like a year ago, I would have said the same thing. And, and we touched on this at the beginning too, is that a year ago, we didn't know that the NBA was going to trend this far in the direction of offense and in the direction of every touch is a call and where physicality isn't rewarded. Now, like, there's a real possibility that the NBA does adjust and doesn't want it to just be an offensive league and creates rules that favor the defense. And if that's the case, which I think it very well could be in the next few years, because I don't think they're just going to let it run away like with this offensive explosion.
175 to 176 in
that
a game.
That game was thrilling, honestly. It was thrilling.
It was fun.
It is. That's the weird thing. Like, offense is thrilling. So but what isn't thrilling is like touch fouls or sweep throughs or like these foul bait shots. Like, that is really tough to watch. So I think the NBA has to take some of that stuff away. I think that will favor teams like the Raptors if they do incentivize defense. But as currently constructed, just to like give you an answer, I don't think this team is very modern. And the biggest reason is they're shooting. Like, they just don't have enough shooting. And every time you ask Nick about it, the lack of spacing, he says, well, I believe in Barnes. I believe in Siakam. These guys got to take shots. Maybe one day Barnes will be a shooter. Yeah. But like, as of right now, that's just not the solution. No matter how many times Nick Nurse says it, I think they need a more creative offense in the sense that you have these three really good playmakers in the front court. All of them are above average playmakers, but they're not good shooters. So how do you unlock that? I think it has to be a little bit more creative. But ultimately, they just need to bring in more shooting. And then like it's like what you said about like you can't say much about this core until they get a center. Okay, my next thing is they need to get more shooting before you can really say, is this team like going to succeed?
That's fair.
Yeah, so I don't have a good answer. Like I said, like,
honestly, we'll I spring that happens. On you. I don't think I have a good answer to that either, but it's a fun thought exercise or experiment to just think about what makes sense in a modern NBA. Speaking of the most modern, probably, NBA player is Nikola Jokic, and the Raptors will be facing him up next after a heartbreaker in Denver. Now, you lose the altitude. It is at home. Maybe you can get some home cooking with the refs, but probably not. What are you looking at for that game tomorrow night in Toronto? They're back home.
Yeah, I'm kind of,
That was not an excited, yeah.
I'm once again dead inside. That's what I was going to say. Like, I don't care about wins and losses anymore for the rest of the season. It doesn't really matter to me. But I think the most interesting thing to be looking for that I've been looking at over the last few games and that I will keep looking for is what happens at the end of games, because right now Scotty is really running the show in the last 5 minutes of games, and that's a pretty big difference from the beginning of the season when it was all Pascal and they were living and dying in Pascal's hands. And Pascal is just kind of standing in the corner at the end of these games. They're not utilizing him at all. They need to figure out a way to maybe use both of them. I don't know what the solution is, but right now it's been interesting to see Scotty basically take the wheel at the end of the games and Pascal being pushed out of the offense. And I'm just curious if that's going to continue to be the case down the stretch of the season.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that. I'm hoping to have Pascal Propaganda, the very own, on the pod later on this week to really talk about Pascal and how that's a trend that I've been noticing as well. And so something that I'm really interested in sort of exploring further. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because it is an interesting wrinkle to what this team looks like to close out games. And quite frankly, it hasn't worked out.
Yeah, I just want to say on the whole modern NBA question, like, these are good podcast questions and everything. But I just, like, the margins are always smaller than we think. So realistically, like, the answer to that question isn't as important as, like, can they find out ways to win games? And they just haven't this season. But every game's been close. Like, that doesn't mean they're a terrible team. It just means that some tweaks need to be made. And I think they're closer than we give them credit for.
No, you're completely right. I mean, if the margin for all of this is incredibly small, because in the NBA, we focus on results. Like, we would have a completely different conversation if it were the Miami Heat who won because, like, in the final seconds against the Boston Celtics and made it to the finals. And we're talking about a team that has two guys who are their two main players who can't shoot at all. And what that sort of means for an NBA offense when everyone around them is, we're talking about specialty guys. I mean, what is Duncan Robinson if not just sort of a one-trick pony there? And some of the guys that they have in Miami, I think the team build just sort of matters on, you know, who wins and who loses at the end of the day. And sometimes it's as much as, you know, was it Tyler Hero's foot on the line or whatever it was that decided that series? But yeah, so things come down to the very end. This podcast has come down to its very end. Thank you so much, Oren, for joining me. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening. Hopefully, we've made the Raptors' kind of crappy season right now seem a little bit better, because it's not just about this year. It's about what this team looks like moving forward, and hopefully broader, sunnier days on the horizon. Is that a saying?
Amen.
We'll run with it. Thank you, Oren, and thank you, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Thanks for having me.